Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett, the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and, of course, Robin Hood Radio's very own We Are Possessive critic and guide. And he joins us weekly. And the films are Run, Collective, and Zappa. And that's all I'm going to say. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Joe. How are you doing this week?
Fine. You could have sequenced those any way that you wanted to give me a different arrangement, and I could have done something. But nope.
I think Run, Collective, Zappa has exactly the right poetic rhythm to it. I think this is exactly the order to do them in. And I must say, your burden has been very light this week, Jill, announcing our subject, because we have 3 one-word titles. And that is not why I selected them to go together.
Is that the theme?
That is the only theme we have this week. Other than that, the movies are really, really different from each other. And since this is Thanksgiving week, I guess we can be thankful that we have 3 pretty good movies. None of these is a masterpiece or anything like that. You know, they're not bad films, and they're all there available to be seen through various streaming platforms. So they are very, very, very accessible. But let us start by talking about Run. Run is, I guess, one of the 2 grimmer titles that I have today, the grimmer movies. It's a thriller. And it was directed and co-written by Anish Chaganti. And the main thing about it is that it has a really interesting cast. It stars Sarah Paulson as a mother and Kira Allen as her teenage daughter. And what is interesting, one of the interesting things about this movie, which, by the way, is a very good movie, and I don't want to forget to mention that apparently this is the most watched new movie that Hulu has ever had. So it's proving to be very popular. And one of the unusual and quite fascinating things about it is that the Kira Allen, who plays the teenage heroine of the movie, the teenage heroine is disabled. She uses a wheelchair, and she can't get around much without her wheelchair. She can't use her legs much. And she is played by an actor who is actually disabled in exactly that way. So the filmmakers were really determined on this. They were not going to have one of these cases where some able-bodied person goes about pretending to be disabled for a movie role. Kira Allen is actually disabled, and that's just a fascinating sidelight. The main thing is she's terrific. I mean, she is so good in this role, and I really hope that she manages to sustain a major career, disability notwithstanding, because she's really good in this movie. And again, the fact that it's authentic, for example, when she's out of the wheelchair and in terrible danger, it has all this extra poignancy and kind of tension, because you know that the actor is in the same sort of situation in her actual life, although I hope never in such danger. And again, the mother is played by Sarah Paulson, who is also just terrific in the movie. So to say almost anything about this movie is kind of a spoiler, so I'm going to say very little about the story of it. But we have the mother and the daughter. The mother is Diane. The daughter is Chloe. And the mother does everything for the daughter. What a devoted mom this is. She homeschools her. She takes care of all of her medical needs. She just is always right there on the spot, and she's so affectionate, and she's so terrific. So wouldn't you know? As time goes by, and you know, again, Chloe is a teenager, and she's a pretty smart one and a pretty energetic one. She starts to develop some suspicions that things in her own life are perhaps not exactly as they seem. And sure enough, as time goes by, she starts exploring a little farther and delving a little bit deeper into some of the things she's not supposed to be looking at, and she finds out that there is some very dark stuff going on involving her and her mother and their relationship and her own past life and so forth and so on. So that's what the movie is about, and I won't say more than that. Now, interestingly, there is running right now also on very available on streaming. In fact, fact, it's another Hulu series. There's a miniseries called The Act, and it is really, really, really good. Patricia Arquette plays the mother in that one. And it is has such a similar story. And again, it's a story that's been told before. It's a kind of story that has existed before. It was not invented by either the movie run or the TV series The Act. But they're really, really similar, and they're both on Hulu. I actually think that the series is better. The series is just excellent. It's some of the best fictional TV I've seen all year, maybe the best, at least in the year so far, and we're almost at the end of 2020. So if you want to see one or the other, I would suggest looking at The Act. It's a really good series. But Run is a very, very effective movie. It's not really a horror movie. It's more of a thriller. You know, it's a suspense thriller about a person, namely young Chloe, who is in a very dangerous situation and finds out more and more how dangerous it is. But the acting is really good. The filmmaking is just tight and taut and just keeps going 1, 2, 3. Very effective suspense filmmaking. And I had a good time watching it. So if you want to see a good suspense movie, a sort of what used to be called a damsel in distress movie, then you could do a lot worse than to look at Run. It's a very, very good movie. Our next film is really, really different. Collective, partly because it is a documentary. And it's a documentary that begins with something that actually happened 5 years ago in Romania, in Bucharest. There was a nightclub called Collective. That's where the movie gets its name from. And there was a fire there. And it was one of these horrifying fire situations where the nightclub turned out to have no fire exits that were operative. And almost 30 people died in that fire. And almost 200 people were badly injured in it, largely from burns. This is only the beginning of the movie, because what happened then was that these burn victims started to be sent out to hospitals, of course. Some of them were in pretty bad shape, and some of them were in horrifying shape. And then they just kept on dying. And more of them were dying than should be dying. And it turned out that they were dying from infections, and it turned out that obviously they were in hospitals, so the infections should have been controlled, should have been taken care of. Then it turns out, and this is really what the movie is about, that the company, the big pharmaceutical company that was making this disinfectant that these hospitals were using, was being diluted by the very outfit that was manufacturing and distributing this disinfectant. So this is absolutely horrifying. This is, of course, major, major, major criminal behavior. And that is really what the movie is about. It's about a bunch of journalists who are tracking down the facts related to this company that has been manufacturing and distributing this diluted disinfectant that was simply causing people to die, people who should not have died. And of course, the movie deals with some of the victims of this and the victims' families and so forth. And then eventually what happens is that the works of these journalists and the publicity that they bring about leads to the health minister of Romania being removed from office, and another new health minister comes in, who is obviously really, really well-meaning and probably pretty capable and really intends to do some things about this, and rectify the situation and make sure that it'll stop and that things like this won't happen again. But of course, there are just enormous, enormous, enormous obstacles that this health minister is coming up against. And again, the movie is very much about that. One of the things that the movie doesn't make anything about, which I thought was rather amusing, is that the journalists who are doing the major job of blowing the whistle on this and pursuing the story and really trying to make sure that the public outrage stays alive so that something gets done about this and so forth. The newspaper is called the Sports Gazette. So I just thought that was a nice little detail. We have here a newspaper, which apparently its main business is covering sports. But here it is covering this really major, major, major scandal, and not just scandal, but human tragedy. The movie moves along at a tremendous pace. You really have to pay attention to it. And since it's in Romania, a place that won't be firsthand familiar to a lot of people, all the more reason why you really have to sort of pay attention. But it's a very absorbing documentary. It just gets one's blood boiling, even though it's happening very far from where I live and work. It's an outrageous kind of a situation. And of course, things like this happen in many different places. It's not, something that's limited to Romania or Western Europe or anything like that. And it's always good to know that when a bunch of good people, in this case, good journalists and politicians, finally get on the job, something can can be done about situations like this. Anyway, that is what Collective is about. It's a very urgent documentary. It has a lot of things to say about life in a modern country where things are not always as they should be, and where sometimes the most outrageous kinds of crimes can be prevented on an ongoing basis. And I'm talking about what this pharmaceutical company did. And it sometimes takes not only politicians, but journalists and just outraged citizens to get something done about this. You see a good deal of the victims and the victims' families and that kind of thing. And sometimes the movie overdoes it a little bit in terms of trying to tug at our heartstrings. But hey, there are good things, good reasons why one's heartstrings should be tugged watching this movie. And mainly, the movie is a good, tough-minded look at a really bad, tough situation that fortunately was ameliorated by the efforts of some good concerned citizens. And our final movie for today, which is a little bit lighter in tone, and it is called Zappa, and that is because, get ready for this surprise, it's all about Frank Zappa, the great American rock and roll musician who was not only a rock and roll musician. Now, Frank Zappa died back in 1993, and he was still only in his middle 50s. He was about 53 years old, actually. So he didn't live a very long life. One of the things the movie doesn't really get into very much, but I wish it got into more, is the fact that Zappa was really, really, really ferociously against, in his life and in his work, drugs and alcohol. He was a very disciplined artist himself. And he was at the height of his fame and career in the 60s, when drugs were sweeping young people and when alcohol was always sweeping everybody. And he was very much against those things because he felt that they were ways of escaping from the real world, and the real world was what needed facing and correcting. However, he was not ferociously against smoking, unfortunately. And of course, that's probably the main thing that killed him when he was still just not even quite to the middle of his 50s. So I wish the movie had gotten a little bit more into his very interesting and very outspoken opposition to drugs and alcohol, and the irony that another kind of addiction, tobacco, played a part in his own demise. But that's all a secondary thing. The main thread of the documentary Zappa is about the fact that there were two main strands in Zappa's career. One is that he was, of course, a really important rock musician, and he had a group, the Mothers of Invention, and it changed its personnel a great deal as the years went by. People came, people went. Sometimes they weren't even called the Mothers of Invention, but that was his group. And that group had not only a whole lot of musical, did not a lot of innovation, not only musically, but they were very, like Zappa, very politically outspoken, and very much against the various kinds of corruption that Zappa saw as just being part of our everyday water that we swim in, the cultural corruption, the political corruption. The band, the Mothers of Invention, was always very outspoken about that, and often kind of outrageously outspoken about that. They were also really, really, really musically inventive. Sometimes their music is borders on the abstract. I was a big listener of them back in the 60s and 70s, and they did a lot of remarkable work. But the other really major strand in Zappa's career, and what he felt was more important in his work, was his work as a classical composer. And I have never been very fond of his classical compositions. I've just never felt that they were really all that good. I don't particularly like his style as a classical composer. I've heard Zappa play the guitar live, and I think he's one of the great rock guitar players of all time. I've heard him in concert back during his lifetime, obviously. And of course, there's an enormous amount of wonderful stuff that's preserved for us on records. He made jillions of records with the Mothers of Invention. But he never really was able to get much of an audience for his classical stuff. And again, I think that that's understandable. I don't think his classical stuff, again, is really all that good. But he believed in it, and he believed in it as the years went by, and he believed in it as the decades went by, and he never stopped creating this music, and doing whatever he could to get it exposed and to get an audience for it. Sometimes taking money that he was earning through his work as a rock musician, as a producer of popular music by other artists and all this kind of stuff, taking that money and putting it into sometimes just getting his own music played so that he could hear it. It was a tremendous struggle for him to find get an orchestra to play his music, and he'd have to pay for that. And then, you know, record it, and then he could listen to it some more. And again, he never managed to gain a very, very wide audience for his classical music. But that is, I would say, that's the main theme of the documentary Zappa. It tells about his life. It tells about his marriage. It tells about his life on the road, the conflicts between having a stable marriage and the roadies and the groupies and all that stuff that's going on when you're a touring artist, and the fact that he had a wife and children, and the fact that, again, this came into conflict often with his work as a rock star. But the main strand, I think, is, again, about this two-part career he had as a very, very successful rock musician and producer, and as a very unsuccessful but very dedicated and determined composer of classical music. So anyway, if you're interested in Frank Zappa, don't miss Zappa. If you're not interested in Zappa, look at it. It's about a really colorful, important cultural icon of bygone decades, and it paints a fairly complete and a really constantly interesting picture of him. It's a little bit ragged around the edges, as was Zappa himself, but I had a really good time watching it. So that is my somewhat themeless, but I hope interesting story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films Run, Collective, and Zappa.